Is this Neil Peart on drums, this version? I don't think so.
No.
We need the Neil Peart. It's his birthday today. Hall of Fame drummer is 65 today. Welcome back. It's hour number 3, Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. We got a double dose of Pierre's this hour. Pierre LeBrun, normally with us after 6 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. He is attending TIFF, the Toronto International Film Festival, so he'll be with us in less than 30 minutes. Along with Rod Francis, Sean Coolman in for Mitch Gallo. Mitch Melnick with you until 7 o'clock. Blue Jays and Orioles tonight at 7. Let's get to Pierre McGuire.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Dagwoods, voted called Montreal's best sandwich in Montreal 3rd year in a row. Thanks, Montreal. You gotta love a Dagwood sandwich.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
I just want to start the show off by saying, man, are the people lucky with the Montreal Athletic and having you on there. That is going to be awesome. Home run.
Oh, thank you very much, Pierre.
Home run. I'm telling you, when I heard the news last night, I was so excited. You know, I'd be doing a cartwheel right now. Our late boss and mentor, Ted Blackman.
Yeah.
He'd be the happiest guy around that you were working for that institution.
I think Ted, you know, one of the great things about hanging out with Ted through the years is as cable television grew and satellite television and 24/7 outlets, he was there ahead of anybody. He had the latest gadget. He was, you know, even though he was kind of an old school dude, he was very, very much on top of the whole technological curve when it comes to radio and television and satellites and the internet and all that. And yeah, this would have been right up his alley.
Oh my gosh. And he'd be so proud of you. He would be. So this is great. And hopefully people are going to get to know it more and more. I can't wait to subscribe to it and pay attention to it. I think it'll be great for hockey and for my favorite team besides the Canadiens are the Alouettes, but obviously not.
Wait a minute.
Not a great year, I understand. Sometimes things happen. We'll get it fixed.
What do you mean your favorite team?
One of my favorite teams are the Montreal Alouettes.
No. I'm talking about the other team. One of your favorite teams, the Montreal Canadiens, your favorite team?
Sure. How could I? Hey, Mitch.
Pierre.
I grew up with that team. Please.
Pierre.
Don't even go
no,
there.
No, I mean, like, right now, it's not your favorite team.
Why not? I still like them. They're an important franchise in the league. Absolutely, they're an important franchise. I always think the Canadiens are a very important franchise. Always have. That's why I get ticked off when they make mistakes.
At the end of the day, I am a Penguin.
That is your favorite team. Right there.
No,
the
it's
two-time
not.
Defending Stanley Cup
for.
Champion Pittsburgh Penguins, that's your
if
favorite
you win,
team.
If you win two cups with an organization and you're really friendly with the people that still own it and run it, I think you would probably have some respect for them.
Well, what was it that Fred Shiro said about
win today and we walk together forever?
There you go. Father of Pierre's best friend, Ray Shiro, former GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins, current GM of the Devils. They're not getting in, are they? The Devils?
No, but they're going to be harder to beat. They're going to be better offensively. I think getting Will Butcher was a huge move. I don't know how they were able to pull that off, but that was big. He's a good player out of the University of Denver. He won the Hobey Baker last year. He's a very good player. So that was pretty good for them to be able to pull that off. They didn't trade Kyle Palmieri in the offseason. There was a chance that could have happened. So I think that was positive for them. I talked to Taylor Hall the other day. I know he's really excited about what this season's going to bring. The Zajac injury is not good for them. That's a little bit of bad news for them. But I think more than anything else, they need Adam Henrique to get back to the way Adam Henrique can play. He's a really important player for them. They need him to be a lot better than he was last year.
Pierre, you kind of threw me for a loop there. I wasn't expecting you to mention the Athletic. But since you did, Arpan Basu had a two-part interview with Max Pacioretty. They met at a juice bar in the downtown area, and this is as good a conversation, let me put it that way, as I've heard it. I feel like they're having a conversation while reading the Q&A between Arpan and Max Pacioretty. He seems very, very secure, and you know he's never been shy to hold back what he thinks about almost anything. And one of the things he was talking about in the interview, I'm just trying to get it up here, is the difference perhaps in philosophy offensively speaking. Let me just read you a paragraph here. Maybe there is a bit of a trend where we have to take more chances. Oftentimes, we say we have the best goalie in the world and one of the best shutdown defensemen in the world, if not the best. So we've got to be a defensive team. Well, maybe not. Maybe since we have such great defensemen back there and such a great goalie, maybe there is a time and a place to take that risk, to try and make a play.
Well, I agree with that. And that goes back to something I said about Claude yesterday, Claude Julien. In 2011, you know, they were life and death to beat Montreal. They got together in Lake Placid as a group and found a way to win the series. But they changed their philosophy from being a passive resistance team to being an aggressive forecheck team. And I think Montreal had a hard time adjusting to that at the time, and they carried that forward. So I don't think Claude is adverse to that stuff. But I think if you're watching teams that are trending, Toronto's one of them. Obviously, I think Dallas will be one of them. Tampa Bay will be one of them. You look at Pittsburgh and Nashville, last year's Stanley Cup finalists. All of them have one thing in common now. Edmonton is another one. Calgary, they're pushing the pace. They're pushing the pace. They're willing to take a chance here and there, and probably more than here and there, to try to score. I think that's one of the things that's really changing in the league from when we had the dead puck era.
And that's one of the, I don't know if you had the opportunity to watch Mark Bergevast sit down with Bob McKenzie.
I did, yep.
And that's one of the things he was talking about is the difference between being defensively responsible and being a defensive hockey team. He told Bob McKenzie, we want to be defensively responsible, but we don't want to be known as a defensive hockey team.
Well, this goes back again a long way. There was a mindset around the league, and the Devils were really the drivers of this, and it's not a knock on them. You know, Jacques Lemaire did a phenomenal job there. He instituted a program with Lou Lamoriello that worked all the time. And they had an elite goalie, they had really good defense, and they didn't have a lot of pure scoring, but they had some really good players that could find ways to score. But everything they did was predicated off of being a defensive team and forcing the other team to try to open up, and they would counterattack. So teams tried to copy. Every league has that. You know, a team has success, you try to copy it. Well, you know, now you're starting to see teams have success going the other way, and I think it's really helped the league. And the other thing is, we've never had so many good young players, Mitch.
Well, that's
it. Those good young players aren't defensemen.
There you go.
Forwards.
Yeah, the key here is the league. The young stars in the National Hockey League are offensively gifted players by and large. Yeah. Go ahead, Rob.
Totally agree.
Does comfort level for a coach also play into this, Pierre? Because we know coaches often will coach to win in the here and now. They're thinking about the next 24 hours, and they're also always worried about their job. I mean, we see how many coaches get fired year after year. So if a coach feels secure, would it not be more likely for them to want to open things up?
I would say yes. I think there's a lot of merit to that. The fact that Claude was hired, you know, later on in a season with a team that was first place in their division, you know, when Michel Therrien got fired, the fact that he came into this situation second time around, obviously there's a comfort zone between him and Marc Bergevin. So I think, no, that's all good. There's no problem with his comfort. I got to think he's very, very comfortable, and he's got the contract to make him even more comfortable. There are a lot of coaches, Rod, as you know, that don't have that kind of yardage on their contract in terms of dollar value and in terms of term. He's got one where at the end of this, no matter what, he should never have to worry about another job.
Pierre, something else that I found curious, I don't know if it means anything, it's just the way my brain works, you know, processing as Bergeron was making the rounds yesterday with Bob McKenzie. He specifically mentioned Morgan Rielly as a stud defenseman, right? And then later on at the golf tournament, he said, ideally, when talking about a potential partner for Shea Weber, it would be a 23-year-old left-handed defenseman who can move the puck. And that's Morgan Rielly. It's almost like twice he's referencing Morgan Rielly. And, you know, I know he just re-signed with Toronto and all that. Am I thinking too much? And he's from BC. And he's from British Columbia. And you know they're collecting guys from BC.
And he played in Moose Jaw, which is not far from Nokomis, Saskatchewan, where the late great Elmer Locke was from.
That's just curious, isn't it, that he would reference another guy on another team?
I think it's a relevant point. You know, here's one. Here are two defensemen that I would love to see the Canadiens add. I don't believe it will happen because they're really cherished by their own organizations. But Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey would be two guys. If I were the Canadiens looking for players, those would be two that I would try to get on the back end. I don't think you're able to get them. So don't go on the internet and say, McGuire said they're being traded. I did not say that. I said if I were the Canadiens, those would be two guys I would cherish.
Much like what you said about Cam Atkinson a few years ago, right? That's basically what you're saying.
I remember saying that Atkinson thing, and then he has a hat trick the next day against Montreal. You asked me what's one player you'd really like to get. Cam Atkinson. Shoot, man, that guy's good. He's really good. And, I understand it. But I grew up watching this guy as a scout, as a TV guy, watching him play at Avon Oil Farms, watching him play at Boston College, seeing him play for Rob Riley in Springfield in the American League. You develop information on players from the time you start tracking them, and you can see, you know what, he's fallen off, or boy, he's really accelerated, or he's kind of flatlining. So you have to have a reference point on all these players to be able to make those kinds of calls, you know?
Yesterday with Tony.
Well, we have a few names there. Jordy Benn, Schlemko, you know, maybe at times will be Mark Streit, you know, on the power play. Again, it'd be a play out in camp with Claude.
Jordy Benn to play with Weber?
Jordy Benn.
You can't do that.
Well, we have what we have at this time. And even Andre last year at time with Shea had a hard time.
All right, I want to come to defend Jordy Benn and a little bit more background after watching all 33 minutes of the conversation with Bergevin and McKenzie. He said what they prioritize defensively, and maybe that has to do with the talent, but it's more important, a quick first pass is more vital to them necessarily than the ability to skate it out. You know, they're not looking for their defenseman to skate it out, which is basically Michel Therrien hockey. You know, we had PK Subban here, one of the best skating defensemen, and he couldn't carry the puck. But that's they put more of an emphasis on a good first pass, which Jordy Benn played great hockey here last year. I'm not saying he's a top defenseman. He played great hockey, and then he came back. He got hurt in the playoffs. He came back against the Rangers. He was terrible in Game 6. Shouldn't have played.
He's a character guy, though. He clears the crease. He blocks shots. He kills penalties. He wins one-on-one battles. He's a great teammate. I told you when you got him, there's nothing wrong with that acquisition. That's a good pickup. He's a solid NHL back liner. You won't get points from him, but he can make a good first pass. That's where the league's going. You know what would be really cool, I think, for you and Arpin, and congratulations to Arpin, too, because I think he's very good at what he does. You guys should try to get a practice and show how much emphasis is put on it at an NHL practice in terms of puck movement rather than puck carrying. Mm-hmm. Because I think that would open up a lot of eyes. Most people think it's all these one-on-one kids that dominate junior hockey that end up being superstars in the NHL. They can't do the same stuff. It's too hard. The guys are too big and too quick, so you got to move the puck. And that's the priority now around the league. And that's why Nashville, if you look at it, when Phil Housley was there in particular, they were so good at moving the puck, they were very difficult to forecheck. And I got to think Buffalo will eventually be like that. And I got to believe Tampa will be like that. And I know Pittsburgh will be like that. So, I mean, you look at it, it becomes tougher and tougher. But those are the teams you're going to have to play against.
With Pierre McGuire every day at 5:05 on Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Pierre LeBrun with us a little earlier than normal on Tuesday in about 15 minutes. Rod?
Marc Bergevin yesterday referenced his whiteboard with the team's depth chart and everyone at training camp, etc. When it comes to the decisions that are going to be made over the next few weeks, Pierre, obviously there's going to be a lot of discussion, a lot of consultation, cooperation between management staff and coaching staff. But ultimately, if a coach is lobbying for a certain player, is he going to get his way if he's got a solid relationship with the manager?
It depends on the cap situation, which obviously the Canadiens don't have a big problem with right now. But it depends on that. It depends on let's say you're the coach and you like an older player, but the older player is going to get more ice time than maybe a burgeoning young star. The coach might not have a lot to say about that. But let's say you have a very good young player who might be able to come in and play a lot of minutes, and the manager drafted that player, the manager will probably listen to the coach. So it depends on the scenario. Every scenario is different.
Okay, well, I've got a player in mind asking the question, and I don't see him making the team myself. But Joe Morrow, we know the connection with Julien. Could you see him lobbying?
I'd be surprised. Joe wasn't one of his favorites when he coached Boston.
Didn't
Joe had a hard time getting in the lineup. So I don't know. That one, I don't know. But what I would say about Joe, in defense of Joe, if you're a fan and you want to go check out his body of work, when he played for the Portland Winterhawks, he was one of the dominant offensive defensemen in junior hockey. He really was. He was really good. Pittsburgh traded him just because they felt that they had to make their team better, and they were really deep at that time, super, super deep on defense with prospects that Ray Shero had gotten. Plus, they got Brian Dumoulin in a trade with Carolina in the Jordan Staal deal. So they were just so deep with young guys. It was just crazy how deep they were. So Joe Morrow became expendable. Then he became expendable again to Dallas. Then he became expendable again to Boston. Then Boston didn't keep him because, as I've been telling you for 2 years, Boston's been stockpiling players. Charlie McAvoy is just a little taste of it. You know, Matty Grizzlick, Robbie O'Gara. They've got so many coming down the pipeline on defense and up front. Boston's going to be stacked, just stacked. So anyways, Joe has become available. Do I think Joe can make a difference? I do, but not in your top four. I think he can make a difference as a reliable depth player. I don't see him being a top four guy.
Pierre, you mentioned cap space a moment ago.
Well, yeah, I think the extra salary cap space certainly it represents an opportunity for Mark. He's not going to spend just for the sake of spending, but to have that extra room on the cap at some point could come in very handy.
Well, it's a nice asset to have moving forward. So always looking to make the team better, but at this point there's not much available, so we'll just keep the cap space.
Pierre, obviously it's good to have cap space heading into a year like this. Is it wise to start a season with $8.5 million worth? Because as you know, once the days roll by, you don't need that much.
Eight's a little deep. I think I've told you over time, I'd prefer to have 4 to 6 available every year. And if you do have 4 to 6 available, what it tells you is you've done a really good job as an organization drafting. You've done a really good job developing, and you've got young players filtering through your system, so they're cheaper assets. They don't cost as much as older ones. So I think I've always told you, I know I've said it in the interviews I've had over time, 4 to 6 million is the perfect buffer. You know, 8.5 to 9 is a little steep. That means that maybe you missed out on a guy that you probably were saving some money for and you weren't able to get. But it's not terrible. You'd be better off having a warm body that can play a little bit, and then you would have, you know, maybe 4 to 6 million available in cap space. That's probably the optimum.
And finishing with Coach Julien from yesterday.
Forgetting that there's still a Phil Dano who improved a lot last year. There's still an experienced Plekanec who I thought in the latter half of the season or when I got here that started, you know, probably giving a little bit more offense to his line, and they had success. So, you know, I feel good about the depth that we have.
Our Morella's question of the day back in the first hour of the show, is Phil Deneau a number two NHL center? Pierre.
Oh, he can play as a two, but he's a three on a Stanley Cup winner. He's not a two on a Stanley Cup winner. He can play as a two. He can play as a two on a playoff team. Absolutely. I was the one that fought for him last year when they were going through that potpourri of injuries down the middle. I said, that guy's got to play in the first line. And I think, I don't know who was in there, but he's like, no, he's not going to play there. And then all of a sudden he's on the first line and he's kicking butt. That's what he is. He's a good player. He's a poor man's Patrice Bergeron. That's what he is. He's not better than that. But if in a perfect world, that guy's playing as a three and you got a legitimate chance to win a ton.
Yeah,
you really do.
That's
if he's going into the wheelhouse of his career, that's what he's doing right now.
But it's a stretch to expect over 80 games for him to be a successful number two. It's hard to, you know, you would know this better. 40 points in your first full year as a member of the Montreal Canadiens, not being scratched or anything like that. First legitimate season as an NHL forward. You're playing with Pacioretty and Radulov for a lot of it. Is could you expect a significant leap, a bit of an improvement, or is that pretty much what he is going to be?
If he can do 40 to 50 points, that would be awesome. That's where I see him as a player. If you imagine if your third-line player is getting 40 or 50 points a season, that's huge. So I'm just going to throw this out there just because it's just a reference point for fans. We'll go over some Stanley Cup winners. We'll go back to the teams that I was fortunate enough to be around. Our first-line center was Lemieux. Our second-line center was Francis. Let's go to the more modern
Hall of Famers.
Let's start with Colorado. Joe Sakic and Peter Forsberg were 1 and 2.
Yeah, two Hall of Famers.
Okay, let's go to Detroit. Sergei Fedorov and Steve Yzerman were 1 and 2. Pick your poison. You know, depending on the night, could be Fedorov, could be Yzerman. Both Hall of Famers. Let's go to recently. Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, back-to-back Stanley Cup champions, 1 and 2. Both going to be in the Hall of Fame. Being a number two in this league is really important. It's part of the seven-player profile that I've been telling you about ever since I've known you, that Scotty Bowman and I developed sitting around his place in Sarasota. Two dominant centers, one specialist forward, one power forward. That gives you four. One elite puck-moving defenseman, one elite shutdown defenseman. That's six of the seven. And then you need an elite goalie. That's seven. If you fit the profile and build around it, you got a legitimate chance to win every single year.
Habs are missing two of those. Thanks, Pierre. As usual, we will talk again tomorrow at 5:05, and thanks for the good wishes for The Athletic.
Oh, congratulations. I can't wait to subscribe. Take care, Mitch. See you later. Hockey.